Okay, we're going to get started. The Committee on Energy, Utilities, and Telecommunications will be in order. I'm going to get that right yet. Thanks, committee members. We're going to have a full week of discussion about our Renewable Development Fund. And we're going to first start off with our first witness will be James Noble from the Legislative Auditor. So welcome, Mr. Noble, and take a breath. I know you came from another meeting.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members of the committee. And for the record, my name is Jim Nobles. I'm the legislative auditor, and with me at the table is Joel Alter, who is the manager of our evaluation. And thank you for this opportunity to discuss with you the evaluation and report we released on the Renewable Energy Development Fund. We think that this report contains some timely and important issues for you to consider. They are important and timely because, as I think we all increasingly recognize, we use an enormous amount of energy in our modern economy, and especially now that we're in the digital age, we use a tremendous amount of electrical energy, and most of it is generated from non-renewable sources. Given concerns about our dependence on non-renewable sources for particularly electrical energy, in 1994, the Minnesota legislature used its regulatory power to mandate that Northern States Power, now Xcel Energy, set aside money to help find ways to generate more electricity from renewable sources. The money is kept to this day by the company, and it is set aside in an account that is generally referred to as the Renewable Development Fund, or RDF. You'll notice that there's a little bit of back and forth on what to call this. We actually, for clarity's sake, call it the Renewable Energy Development Fund, but the acronym doesn't quite fit, RDF, but we refer to it both ways. However you refer to it, we were asked to do an evaluation by the Legislative Audit Commission of how the fund is being administered and to assess what impact the fund has had on efforts to develop more energy from renewable sources. Our evaluation found that the RDF certainly has potential, but that potential has not been fully utilized or realized. We found that the process for allocating money from the fund has become fragmented, and that fragmentation has led to fragmentation in the way RDF projects are administered and overseen. And we don't think that really helps either accountability or clarity of purpose for what we are trying to achieve. In addition, our review of the RDF projects raised concerns and questions about impact. Some projects that we examined were not well defined, and therefore it's hard to measure what impact they have had. Others, on the other hand, are projects that are well defined but are not related to finding renewable sources for electric generation. Our evaluation, I think, provides the legislature with information and findings, recommendations, and some simple basic questions. What is the purpose of the Renewable Development Fund, the RDF? What are we trying to accomplish? If the purpose of the RDF is to generate more electricity from renewable sources, why has so much RDF money been allocated by the legislature for other things? And how can we ensure greater accountability for the money the state requires Xcel ratepayers to pay? To tell you more about what we found and what we recommend, I'd like to now call on Mr. Alter to make a presentation of our report. And thank you again, Madam Chair and members.
Thank you, Mr. Nobles.
Thank you,
Welcome,
Madam Chair.
Mr. Alter, please state your name.
Thank you. I'm Joel Alter with the Legislative Auditor's Office, and I was the manager of this study, and with me are Valerie Bombach and Sarah Roberts, who also worked on it. Again, I'd like to just touch on, before we get into a little background about the RDF, the overall conclusions that we reached that Jim alluded to. First, that the Renewable Development Fund is quite unusual in its structure and as a funding source. The fund is not a line item in the state budget. It might not even be public money at all. And these features of the RDF play a role in our judgment about how the fund has been and should be used in the future. Second, this is a fund that was set up originally in a very simple way But over time, as Jim said, it's become the legislature has played an increasing role in how the money is directed, and we'll be talking about that more in a moment. And third, we think that there are improvements that the legislature should make in the fund to enhance its chances for impact, clarify its purposes, and strengthen accountability. Before getting into more about the fund, just a word of clarification about when we use the term renewable electrical energy sources, what are we talking about? Clearly, what we mean are sources of energy that are naturally replenished. We're not talking about fossil fuels like coal and gas. We're not talking about nuclear power, which relies on sources of uranium. Generally, we're talking about electricity generated from wind, the sun, living matter or biomass, or from water. In 2008, renewable energy provided about 12% of Minnesota's electricity. As you know, the legislature has set some very ambitious goals that will require Minnesota to make greater use of renewable energy in the future. The intent in statute is that renewables will account for at least 25% of the state's energy use by 2025. And also one more clarification, and I'll talk about this more in a minute, but our understanding is that the Renewable Development Fund was created to focus on renewable sources of electricity. So there are other forms of renewable energy, like ethanol, that relate to transportation purposes, but that are not really directly related to electricity generation. A little background on the Renewable Development Fund. In 1994, as Jim mentioned, there was contentious debate in the legislature about the future of the Prairie Island nuclear power plant, owned at that time by Northern States Power, now Xcel Energy. The plant generated spent nuclear fuel, which was stored on site. Ultimately, the legislature authorized continued storage and actually expanded storage at that site of spent fuel, but it also set forth some requirements. One was that Xcel Energy set aside money in an account, the RDF, and the amount of funds transferred into this account was initially based on the volume of nuclear waste stored at Prairie Island and then later at Monticello. Currently, Xcel's obligation is about $20 million annually. I should add that about $165 million in total has gone into this fund over the years. Expenditures from the RDF are not those of Xcel Energy. They are actually expenditures that come from Xcel's ratepayers. The legislature authorized Xcel to recover the cost of RDF expenditures from ratepayers, and I should add that the vast majority of these are recovered from the Minnesota ratepayers. And finally, the statutes have a brief statement of the account's overall purpose. According to the law, the
Madam
purpose
Chair.
Of the account is development of renewable energy sources.
Excuse me, Mr. Alter. Senator Brown.
I wanted to go back to that slide. Can you explain to me the thinking behind charging Xcel the fee on their dry cask to store that on site? Do you know what the original thinking was? To me, it's kind of a pay-to-play mentality. I'm just wondering what the thinking was.
Madam Chair and Senator Brown, I think that's correct. I mean, at the time, there was essentially a deal done that for Xcel to continue to be able to store spent fuel at that site, there were some requirements that were going to be imposed on Xcel, and this was one of many. But I think that's correct. I think we might like to think that it was also intended to help generate renewable fuels, but clearly, it was also just a cost of doing business if Xcel was going to continue to operate those plants.
Madam Chair,
Senator Brown. Mm-hmm.
Is there an expense to the state of Minnesota for Xcel storing dry casks on site?
Mr. Alter.
Madam Chair, not that I'm aware of, and if there is, maybe Xcel can address that when they're up here in a little bit. The Renewable Development Fund is unlike just about any other legislatively created fund that we know of. It was authorized by the legislature, but as I mentioned, the money is not part of the state treasury, nor is it considered to be part of the state budget. The account, as Jim mentioned, resides at Xcel Energy. We talked with various legal experts at the legislature about the nature of the RDF, and they said it's unclear whether the money in this fund should be considered public or private money. The funds receive very little oversight from the state finance department. They essentially only track the dollars if there are grants made to state agencies. And because the RDF is not part of the state treasury, it has not been subjected to regular financial audits by our office. Even within the legislature, we found that there has been confusion over the years about which committees have jurisdiction to deal with this fund because it has such an unusual status. Here's a quick overview of expenditures out of the RDF. The first projects were selected in 2002, and expenditures started in earnest in around 2003. There's been a significant increase since 2004. The annual expenditures in 2009 and 2010 actually exceeded the amount of money coming into the fund in those years because there had been some accumulation of funds up until those years. Another trend during this time has been the fragmentation of RDF project selection and oversight. In 2001, the administrative responsibilities were fairly simple and straightforward. At that time, the Public Utilities Commission, which, as you know, regulates electrical utilities in Minnesota, made final decisions about which projects to fund, and all of the PUC projects were then administered by Xcel Energy, and that means that Xcel wrote the contracts and they oversaw the grants. Today, the process is more complicated. The PUC still has a role in project selection, but that's only if there's money left in the RDF after it's been allocated to other administrative agencies. In recent years, the legislature has made more decisions about which projects will be selected, and it's given responsibility for selection of many projects to the University of Minnesota and the Department of Commerce. Also, we've seen more complication in project oversight. Now you not only have Xcel Energy playing a role in project administration for certain projects, but you also have the University of Minnesota and the Department of Commerce administering certain grants.
Mr. Alter. Senator Jungbauer.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Mr. Alter, so I guess what I'm hearing you say is whoever's been in charge of the legislature has kind of been in charge of the money and been able to give it to who they want for their special projects. Is that how I'm kind of gathering this?
Mr. Alter.
Madam Chair, Senator Jungbauer, and perhaps we'll get to a slide in just a moment that shows the extent to which the legislature has directed the money, but essentially the legislature has played a more active role. It used to be that the PUC was essentially making all of the project decisions, but now that responsibility is shared with other entities, including the legislature.
Thank you.
Mr. Alter.
Over the years, the RDF has funded about 200 grants. The majority of these have been for research and development. Typically, R&D projects are exploring technologies that are not yet ready for commercial application. The projects have varied a lot in size. For example, the projects that have been administered by the University of Minnesota have tended to be more at the small end, what they call seed grants. The projects administered by the PUC have tended to be larger, in the area of $1 million on average. The energy source that has accounted for the largest number of grants is biomass. Minnesota, as you probably know, has abundant biomass resources, and there's frankly been less research into biomass and its potential applications than energies such as wind power. We found that 86% of the RDF grants have gone to Minnesota-based grantees. That includes nearly all of the projects administered by the Department of Commerce and the University of Minnesota. The PUC has had much more of a mix of in-state and out-of-state projects. And as I said, initially we had the PUC that was essentially making all of the project selection decisions, but the legislature has played a larger role in recent years. And here we see a breakdown of the dollars and how they've been allocated. State law says that the PUC shall approve all expenditures from the RDF, and what you see here is that in red, the PUC has essentially allocated 44% of the dollars. In yellow, those are the allocations that have been made by the legislature to the University of Minnesota, to the Department of Commerce, and others, and those account for 56% of the dollars that have gone out. Generally, we found that the processes that have been used to solicit proposals and pick grantees have been consistent with good administrative practices. But we also found that because you've had multiple administrative entities that have been involved in making these allocations, there have been some inconsistencies that have arisen. And let me give you a few examples of that. State policy says that there should always be a written contract or a grant agreement when grants are made, and Xcel Energy follows that practice. The Department of Commerce has followed that practice. The University of Minnesota generally has not. State policy says it's preferable to make grant payments in the form of reimbursements rather than making payments up front. Again, Xcel Energy and the Department of Commerce generally follow that. The University of Minnesota tends to provide upfront funding, although they also do, typically if it's a multi-year project, they'll do annual reviews of how the money is being spent. Xcel Energy's contracts require grantees to disclose in their reports that the source of the funding is the RDF and the Xcel ratepayers. And we think that's a good thing because it promotes transparency about the projects and the funding source. In contrast, the Department of Commerce and the U of M have not required that type of disclosure, and so a reader of their reports might not know that Xcel ratepayers are, in fact, the source of the funds. Another difference is the involvement of Xcel Energy ratepayer representatives in the project selection process. The PUC has used a process that has an advisory body that includes a couple of ratepayer representatives. In contrast, there have been no such representatives in the processes used by the legislature, the Department of Commerce, and the University of Minnesota. And finally, we observe that there have been some differences in the clarity of project proposals. Generally, we saw that the Department of Commerce, in our view, did a better job of articulating up front what specifically the projects were intended to accomplish.
Mr. Alter. My question on that last slide right here is you said for the U of M grants that there are reviews at the end. Who gets the reviews? Who are the reviews given to take a look at and see if?
Madam Chair, these annual reviews, and believe someone from the university is here and could perhaps speak to that, but they have, for the project selection process, used essentially a peer review process where they will bring in perhaps academic experts from other universities. I think they bring in some local and state experts to assist with that process. In terms of the annual reviews of, let's say, a three-year project and to figure out if it's on track, I think those are done more internally with their own staff at it's called the Institute for Renewable Energy and the Environment. I believe I saw Dick Hemmingson sitting over here, and he can perhaps speak to that later, but I believe that's more of an internal process to review the status of the research.
Okay, that would be my next question that I will wait for them, though, to have it. Well, Senator Jungbauer.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Mr. Alter, as I'm going through this and, you know, read through the report, of course, sometimes you read through and you miss things, but I'm trying to get at, and I don't know if you're alluding to it or if it'll come out later, but did we find anything that benefited the ratepayers that paid into this fund in terms of any of this, the funding for these programs or research and development?
Well, Madam Chair and Senator Jungbauer, and we'll get to talking about impacts in a moment, and I think to some extent impacts are in the eye of the beholder on these projects, because it is sometimes difficult to tell for sure whether these projects are leading to real and tangible impacts, and certainly it's been a mixed picture on that. I think, as we'll mention when we get to our recommendations, I think our interest here is trying to ensure that there is enough transparency so that people both understand that ratepayers are the source of the funding and that the projects have some relevance to the ratepayers in this process, that they aren't completely separate from electricity generation, for example.
Senator Jungbauer.
So, Madam Chair and Mr. Alter, so what you're telling us is somehow we need to, as we change these things, gear this to be able to somehow express to the ratepayers that there is going to be a benefit, or that somehow these reports, when we receive them, will show some connection to a benefit to the ratepayer? Is what you're looking for?
Madam Chair, members, I think that's what we think is reasonable, is kind of reestablishing that contact with the ratepayers that we think has been lost.
Great, thanks.
Senator Anderson.
Well, Madam Chair, all I was going to add is that in our committee, in the funding division, we've traditionally had a report from IRE about the results of the projects and the research. So that's just something that we've done as had hearings on it. But those are good questions that you're asking.
Madam Chair, if I could just add, too,
Mr.
because
Nobles.
I think this is going to come up quite a bit, and it goes back to the question that Senator Brown asked, and that was, in the original deal that was struck, what was the purpose and what was the connection? You asked what was the connection to nuclear energy, and now what is the connection to ratepayers? I think the nature of the controversy as it was occurring and the process by which the deal was struck makes all of that a little bit elusive. You know, obviously there were people, some people who are still in the legislature, that were a part of that negotiation. What I think you would find is, and this is not untypical, as I'm sure you would agree, that people come away from those situations with somewhat different perspectives and recollections on exactly what the purpose was. I think the ultimate, as Mr. Alter said, the ultimate purpose was that if Xcel, Northern States Power, wanted to continue the operation at Prairie Island, which required it to find a way to store spent fuel, they were going to have to set this money aside, and that its disposition has evolved, shall we say, over time. And I think that the connection both to nuclear power, to renewable energy, and to ratepayers over time has become increasingly elusive. And we're going to get into even more of that in just a moment.
Thank you,
Mr. Chair, I want to shift from talking about kind of the process and procedural issues to talking more about the impact of this fund. And earlier I mentioned that most of the grants have been for R&D, so I'd like to start with that type of grant. I think it's worth noting that most states don't provide grants for renewable energy R&D. And, you know, that's partly because it's easier to look at proven things. It's risky and it's expensive to get into the business of doing R&D and providing grants for R&D. And so most states have not gone that direction. Many of the RDF projects, on the other hand, have in fact tackled some fairly early stage research and development, and there certainly is a role for that type of research. As I mentioned, though, just a moment ago, with that type of research, it's often harder to identify the tangible outcomes, partly because the results may be years down the road if they happen at all. A limited number of the RDF projects, in our view, had direct measurable impacts, for example, resulting in commercialization of a technology, a patent application, a publication in an academic journal. And again, part of that is the nature of R&D. There is no guarantee of a payoff. Some things may happen down the road, but I think, again, it makes it harder to convey to the ratepayers exactly what we're getting when we tackle that type of a project. The other issue that I want to talk about here is that relates to sort of the limited impact of these grants, is that not all of them have been related to what we think was the law's original purpose, that is developing sources of renewable electricity. As we mentioned, the law is fairly brief. It never explicitly says that this fund is about electricity generation. We talked with people who helped to author that law. We looked at the source of funding, which again is electricity ratepayers. We looked at who was originally put in charge of overseeing this fund, which was the PUC, which is the state's electricity regulator. And it was hard for us to come away from this thinking anything but that this fund was really established for electricity generation and to promote that. But we do think that some of the projects that have been funded have strayed from that original purpose. And just some examples of that. The largest single expenditure from this fund was for a so-called clean coal plant, the Mesaba plant, that did not involve a renewable type of energy. There have been RDF projects that have researched vehicle fuels. There have been others that have looked at materials such as alternatives to plastics that don't use petroleum. There have been studies that have looked at ways to conserve energy. And all of these, I think there are arguments to be made for that type of research to be done. But again, I think it goes back to the question of, is this the right funding source, and is there sufficient transparency? And there have been some other legislatively mandated projects looking at alternative uses for the Ford plant in St. Paul, mandating a report on the green economy, looking at other types of vehicle technologies. Again, I think in some cases the connections to electrical generation have been tenuous.
Madam Chair?
Yes. Senator Benson.
Mr. Alter, projects that appear non-compliant, I see a little bit of legislative, but is there a pattern in the other four categories? Did they go through the PUC process or Department of Commerce or U of M?
Mr. Alter.
Madam Chair, I would say it's a mix. I think that the projects that have been authorized by the PUC and administered by Xcel Energy have been pretty true to the original purpose of the legislation. In fact, the PUC has established a policy that essentially says we will only select projects that are about electricity generation, and they even take conservation off the table in terms of things they will fund. I would say it's been more the legislatively directed projects, which are administered by the Department of Commerce, and the University of Minnesota projects, which have strayed from that original purpose. And I should add that, you know, in the case of the University of Minnesota, the legislature has put into statute some authorized uses of the funds that do stray from that original purpose of electrical generation. So it's not that they are not following statute, but the statute has evolved over time. I mentioned earlier that 86% of the grantees are Minnesota-based, but I want to cut this a little bit different way. We also looked at whether or not each of these projects either has involves a Minnesota company or a facility other than the grantee, or did it address a Minnesota-specific question, or did it use Minnesota products? And about 58% of the projects using those criteria had a Minnesota-specific application. Many of the other projects, especially those at the University of Minnesota, were more general or generic in nature. They looked at potentially important issues, but often at an earlier stage of research where it was not getting close to commercialization and didn't have a Minnesota-specific application.
Madam Chair.
Yes, Senator Howe.
Madam Chair, Mr. Nobles, how many projects or grants were host community, and was there any, did you find any priority or any preferential treatment given to host communities for the award of grants?
Madam Chair and Senator Howe, just a clarification about what you mean when you say host community.
I would think where the IFACs are at, probably Monticello and Red Wing.
Oh,
Mr. Alter.
Madam Chair and Senator Howe, I'm not sure that those communities, and I, again, Xcel can correct me if any come to mind, I'm not sure if there have been any specific projects that have been related to the plants themselves or to the communities that they're a part of. And again, typically what we're talking about here are grants that are made to researchers either in the private sector or at a university. And so they have not been typically grants to communities or related to these specific plants. Also, we observe that communication is important in this program. What you want is for there to be research, good research done, and then those results get used, whether by private entities or by researchers elsewhere. And one of the things that we observed is that communication in many cases has not been what it should be. You won't find that there's a single website that kind of brings together a list of all of these projects. Most of the final reports aren't online. The exception is the ones that have been administered by Xcel Energy. There hasn't been a consolidated report that kind of brings together the experience of all of these administrative entities. And many of the individual reports that we reviewed, it was a mixed picture, but certainly as we read through them, there were some that did a pretty good job of communicating very technical findings. There were others that frankly did a very poor job or that didn't have much documentation or were overly technical and wouldn't be of much use to certainly a general reader.
Mr. Alter, on that point, whose responsibility do you feel that should be placed to have the website and a final report? Should it be the RDF board or the PUC or?
Madam Chair, and we'll be getting to this in our recommendations. I mean, we think that in general there's a need for a more coordinated approach to project selection in this process, and that would also include project administration, I think. And so I think logically we could look to a department like the Department of Commerce to perhaps pull some of this together or the PUC, just because they are state entities that would be kind of logical options. I've talked mostly about R&D projects, but I want to say a word about other types of projects that are intended to have a more immediate impact and to generate electricity more quickly. There have been what are called energy production grants. For example, funding a wind turbine or refurbishing an existing generating plant. And in some cases, these have provided useful demonstrations. But we also observe that the amount of electricity generated by these projects has not been large. Some of the projects, such as the Mesaba project I talked about earlier, have not been completed. In Minneapolis, you've got what's known as the Crown Hydro Power Plant, $1.5 million spent there, but that project doesn't look like it's going to proceed to completion. So the amount of electricity generated from those grants has not been large. It's a little better picture on the side that's known as REPI payments, the Renewable Energy Production Incentive. And these are payments that are made to existing renewable energy facilities based on the amount of energy or the amount of electricity they produce. Originally, the REPI program was funded by the General Fund. Starting in 2003, it was funded by the RDF, and currently, or as of the most recent data, it was about 1.5% of Minnesota's electricity came through the REPI payments.
Madam Chair.
Senator Brown.
Yes, Madam Chair. Mr. Alter, about how much money for REPI payments come out of the RDF every year?
Mr. Alter.
Madam Chair and Senator Brown, I think it's about $10 million. Is that right?
Senator Anderson.
Madam Chair, I was just going to comment on the REPI payments because it's a one-time. I mean, they did a one-time offering. So if you were a small wind developer, you would sign up for this incentive and you'd get it for 10 years. So only a few people have been able to get into that program once it was fully subscribed really, really quickly. And I just wanted to point out that that piece of spending by the Renewable Development Fund has made a huge impact. The general fund money for that program did too, and that's only for small Minnesota-owned wind projects, small, you know, locally owned wind projects that are based in the state of Minnesota. And it's people around the country have pointed to that program, our small wind incentive, to show that Minnesota actually leads the country in the amount of wind farms that are owned by small community, farmers or other groups of people who live here, as opposed to most wind farms, which are owned by large, you know, national or international companies. So it's helped to make Minnesota be the leader in community-owned wind projects.
That's right. Mr. Alter.
Madam Chair, just a couple other points before getting to our recommendations. I did want to say a word about the RDF board. This is a board that the PUC created in 2001 to play an advisory role in project selection. We think this board has provided useful input into these decisions. And as I mentioned earlier, we think it's been good that two of the people on this board are representatives of Xcel ratepayers. And then we think that's a good perspective to bring to this advisory board. It's interesting, though, that in the law, even though the law references this board, there is no articulation of what the board does, what the composition of the board is, what the terms of the members will be, how they're to be appointed. So the law's vagueness is a concern to us. I should also mention that this board only has input into the PUC decisions. It doesn't play a role in the selection of projects by the legislature or the University of Minnesota. And one other issue is that of administrative costs. The RDF has paid for administrative costs related to the oversight of projects approved by the PUC and the University of Minnesota. In the case of the Department of Commerce, they have generally absorbed those administrative costs and not been compensated out of the RDF. The RDF law is brief, and it doesn't specifically address the issue of whether the fund can cover administrative costs. So I think our concern is that without explicit statutory authorization, it's unclear whether that's a legitimate use of funds. I should add that the PUC has adopted a policy on administrative costs that limits Xcel's spending, but that policy has been subject to some differing interpretations. And again, that cap that they have placed does not apply to anyone but Xcel Energy. It doesn't apply to the University of Minnesota or the Department of Commerce.
Senator Brown.
Yes, Madam Chair, Mr. Alter. On page 30 of your report, you mentioned that the University of Minnesota has used RDF funds for administrative costs, and I understand that where that may be necessary. But you also mentioned training, outreach, sponsorships, and even staff travel has been paid for out of this fund. Have you been able to account for these expenditures or get a breakdown of these costs?
Mr. Alter.
Madam Chair, Senator Brown, I don't recall seeing, and I'd have to check on that to see if we actually ever saw a dollar breakdown of that. And again, Mr. Hemmingson from Irie at the university is here and maybe could speak to that, whether they have that kind of a breakdown. I think I recall just seeing categories of projects that they or activities that they've used, that they've categorized as administrative types of expenditures.
Madam Chair, follow-up. I think it would be important to know where that money is being spent and having a breakdown. I would like to see a breakdown of that. I don't know who I ask for that, and you mentioned that gentleman's name, but I think that's very important to know.
Senator Anderson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. On a different subject, going back to your list of how much renewable electricity was actually generated by expenditures under the fund, did you look at the new solar rebate program that we authorized last session when you came up with that? Because that is a direct rebate that's available when you install solar, and over time it will add a lot of electricity, but I don't know how much. By the time you did your report, probably hadn't started.
Madam Chair, Senator Anderson, that's correct. I mean, we were essentially looking at what was in place already, and there's been a solar rebate program operated by the Department of Corrections of a slightly different nature, and we did take that into account, but not the new rebate program.
Oh, Senator Brown.
I'd like to follow up on Senator Anderson's question. Do you know how effective the solar rebate program has been thus far, or have you just not looked at that to this point?
Mr. Alter.
Madam Chair and Senator Brown, I know that the program has used its money, which means people have been out there and have made application and qualified, and I know that the Department of Commerce has come back to the legislature at various times to get additional money for that project. I believe there's been a combination of RDF and general fund money going to that program over the years, but we didn't specifically address the effectiveness of the program by other measures, other than it's been there, it's been used a lot to the extent that its funds have been have disappeared over time.
Madam Chair.
Senator Brown.
Are you able to specifically say what is a specific purpose for that rebate money, what it's used for?
Madam Chair and members, why don't we look into that? I mean, I think, again, I'm just trying to remember when the program was set up, if there was a specific intent that was articulated. I don't recall.
I don't know if Senator Anderson can comment on that.
Well, Madam Chair, essentially it provides a portion of the cost of a solar installation. So the money only goes out the door if solar is actually installed on someone's roof. So it's not used for, I mean, it's only used for actual solar production. But hopefully we'll have another committee hearing where we can talk about sort of the impact of all of the solar programs we've had in general. But the new rebate that we passed last year, I can tell you that one impact it's had directly already is on jobs, because this rebate was used to get the commitment of a company from Washington State to open a new manufacturing plant in Minnesota. And they said if we pass this solar rebate, they will open a manufacturing plant, which they broke ground on this summer. And there's people working now on. And I know a community in my district, a suburban community that I represent, is one company that I'm aware of, or one community that I'm aware of that has already contracted to install some of these Minnesota-made solar panels on some of their facilities. So it would be interesting. I don't know the big picture and how many they've sold already, but I know that they're going up around the state and that they're employing people now. I can't give you any more than that.
And Madam Chair, I guess just to add, I was actually in a conference committee or observing it when this latest allocation that Senator Anderson refers to for the rebate was specifically focused on trying to help a Minnesota-based company sell solar panels that are manufactured in Minnesota. So in addition to having a renewable energy objective, I think clearly, and it was stated by Representative Rukavina, who was the sponsor in the House, that it was very much directed towards a job creation program.
And I believe that the information from Mr. Jensen is the rebates for this year will be $2 million. Now, this is out of the fund, but also we understand there's some general fund money that's going to be going to those rebates also. And then $4 million for 12, and then $5.55 up to 2015. So that's what we have so far. But a little concerned about the general fund money, though, if we're doing some rebates out of that. So we need to look into that a little better.
Madam Chair, we used some stimulus money for rebates in the last couple of years because we had a substantial amount of stimulus money available for renewable projects. So I don't remember how much general fund money is left in the rebate program. I suppose Mr. Jensen knows better than anyone.
Mr. Jensen.
Madam Chair, members, the general fund money was one time. So it does not carry over into 12 and 13.
Okay.
I think that was the stimulus money.
I kind of remember it was like 300 or 400,000, and most of that, I think, is committed.
Okay. Good. Mr. Alters.
Madam Chair, let's turn to our recommendations, and starting with those that relate to kind of the overall structure of this program. Of primary importance, we think that the legislature should address the fragmentation of RDF allocations, provide more focus, provide greater accountability, and we suggest two options for this. One would be to go back to essentially giving the PUC, consistent with current law, authority to approve projects. Currently, they have, under the law, authority to approve all expenditures, and this would be essentially consistent with a regulatory model. The funds would come from the ratepayers of one utility, and then the regulatory entity would approve the expenditures. A second option would be for the legislature to approve all projects using a model something like the Legislative Citizen Commission on Minnesota Resources. And I know that some people might say, well, why should we involve the legislature more in a process like this? And I think what we observed is the legislature has been very involved in the past, and perhaps a model in which there was perhaps a more coordinated approach to the decision-making would be worth considering. So those are the two options that we placed on the table. We said that if the legislature does opt for a legislative process for coordinating these decisions, then it should look at the status of the Renewable Development Fund itself, because as we noted earlier, it's not clear that this is actually state money we're talking about. So it's not clear that the legislature has a role in making those allocations. So if your wish would be to have the legislature involved in a more direct way in the allocation, then this should be made a state fund. I should add, too, and the PUC could speak to this, but they also believe that if it were to be made a state fund, that the fund should be applied to other electrical utilities around the state. That would be another wrinkle to consider in that option. We also recommended a need to clarify the purpose of the RDF. For example, should the projects just be related to electricity? Should the fund only be open to projects with Minnesota-specific applications? And also, as I mentioned, a need to clarify the role of the RDF board, ranging from its role to its composition. And then two other things to mention, and that is this issue of reporting on projects. We'd like to see better reporting, and we realize that that's not something that can be mandated, but I do think that having some expectations in state law, and we suggest some language in the report, might help in this regard. We also think the legislature should address the issue of administrative cost, explicitly authorizing administrative cost, but we also think the legislature should consider a cap on those costs, which would include figuring out a reasonable way to define those costs. So overall, again, we think this is a potentially valuable tool as Minnesota moves toward some very ambitious renewable energy goals. But we also think that this is a fund that, if it's to have a strong impact, needs a clearer purpose, a more coordinated process for selecting projects, stronger mechanisms for accountability, and a clearer presentation of information. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Mr. Alters. Did you have a chance to go through some of the projects and give recommendations on those, or did you ever go into that detail?
Madam Chair, we certainly read the reports, and most of them are just that. They are research reports. They're intended to be kind of pushing something to the next stage of product development. And so we critique them from a long range, but we didn't look in great detail at any individual reports or critique them in our own report.
Mm-hmm. But Madam Chair, just if I could add, and Mr. Alter can certainly elaborate on this, we did hire some expert consultants to assist us in this, since some of what we're dealing with is quite technical, and we wanted to have an independent technical review of these as well. And so that was very valuable. And so I think some of our conclusions came from what these outside experts told us.
Madam Chair, and I neglected to mention that. I mean, there was a limited sample of about 10 projects where our technical consultants not only looked at the reports, but kind of looked at the rationale for what was being done, and was this a reasonable thing for an individual state, let's say, to take on? And it was a mixed bag. I mean, there were certainly some projects that they thought had some promise, and there were others that they looked at and kind of wondered why we were plowing this ground. So,
Senator Brown.
Yes, Madam Chair. In your research, did you come to a conclusion on whether or not you feel Xcel ratepayers have had a good return on their investment with the RDF?
Madam Chair, Senator Brown, I would certainly say that I think there's a potential for getting a better return on investment. I wish I could say something more definitive about what exactly we've gotten from the expenditures we've made. And again, part of it is just the difficulty with research and development of saying in a conclusive way, here's what we're getting for our dollar. I mean, I do think that some of the projects have, to some extent, been dead ends. Some of them have led to commercialization, so it's a mixed picture in terms of what's actually happened. But in terms of whether this has moved us as a state down the road toward some real promising ideas in the renewable energy area, I mean, I just think there's room for improvement, and this has been a start, but it's going to have to be stronger if this is really going to be a tool for leveraging real improvement.
Thank you.
But Madam Chair, I would just want to add again, and I don't mean to add confusion, but I'm really not sure when you pose that question, Senator Brown, that it's been clearly established that the main purpose is to return a benefit to the ratepayers. Although the money is extracted from them, I think there are a variety of other purposes, and those, as we've said over and over again, those purposes seem to have expanded over time as people have seen this pot of money being available for a variety of different things. So to really point to a direct connection back to the ratepayers, I think is a very difficult thing to do.
So we have our work cut out for us in defining the purpose of this.
Madam Chair.
Hey, Mr. Nobles.
Senator Brown, yes, I think this, as I said in my opening remarks, I think that this report, although somewhat long and technical itself, really presents to you some pretty basic, simple questions. What is the purpose of the RDF? What are we trying to accomplish? Who are we trying to benefit? And there are other questions, too, but those, I think, are some of the ones that you are getting at.
And it's a fascinating report. Read it twice. And I'm still trying to get my hands around your question, Senator Brown, especially when I see the amount of dollars that went out of the state. And do you have a percent figure on how many dollars have left the state?
Madam Chair, we do in the report. What I can tell you that comes to mind, again, is that most of the dollars spent by the Department of Commerce and the University of Minnesota have been in Minnesota. The Public Utilities Commission has opened up its process, and it's been a more mixed picture. I recall the percentages and not the dollars. I think it's in the high 50%, around 59% or something like that, of the dollars the PUC has allocated that have gone to Minnesota-based grantees, the remainder out of state.
Senator Howe.
Madam Chair, is it kind of like some of the ratepayer dollars that have flowed out of Minnesota for Yucca Mountain that doesn't look like we're making progress there? But I just, I'm sorry for that commentary, but can you explain a little bit to me about the formula that we use and why it's been tinkered with? And I see we have a magical number of 32 storage casks currently, but I'm guessing that'll be adjusted at some point in the near future, too. And where we're at, what our projections are, how many total dry casks are going to be stored in the two FSCs that we have here in the state of Minnesota, and just kind of some rationale for the sliding scale and where we're going with that.
Mr. Alters.
Madam Chair, a lot of questions here, and there are probably some members who know more about the legislatively what was behind some of the changes in the formula. When the RDF was set up, from what I recall, it was the amounts that had to be contributed by Excel was tied directly to the number of casks. Then for a while, there was a change so that it was a flat rate. I think Excel was putting $16 million into the fund annually for a while, and so it wasn't directly tied to having a certain number of casks. And I believe it was a couple of years ago, the legislature returned the formula to the point where once Excel hits a certain, and again, I'm forgetting the details, but a certain number of casks, then we're back to a per cask basis for how much they have to contribute to the fund. Again, I don't recall the reasons for some of those changes, and there may be other members who can speak to that better than I can.
Senator.
One follow-up, Madam Chair. And I see that you know, that's currently if the plants are in operation, but once they're not in operation, then there's a flat fee. And I'm just wondering where the money, the $7.5 million per year, if they're not in operation, where is that money going to come from if my guess is that the money that's being generated today is coming from operations?
Mr. Alders.
Madam Chair and Senator Howe, I mean, my understanding is that if one of the plants isn't in operation, then Excel doesn't have to contribute to the fund anymore for that plant.
That's not the – Madam Chair, I don't believe that's the way I read it.
No. Maybe we can have Excel clarify that. I may
be
misrecalling that.
Oh, actually, Mr. Fuller can answer that.
Madam Chair, Senator Howell, you're right. It's conditioned on whether the PUC finds on like every two-year review whether they're making a good faith effort to move the waste off-site. If they find that they're not, that triggers the payment obligation. If they find that they are making a good faith effort, then there is no payment obligation.
Thank you.
You're welcome. Senator Anderson?
Madam Chair, I was just going to ask if I noticed, I looked at the agenda now, so I guess that sort of answers my question. We're going to hear from the board, and we're going to hear from the University of Minnesota about where some of the money has gone, where some of the, just in fairness, I know I appreciate what the legislative auditor has done in this report. It's very helpful. But I think we also need to know, you know, let the proponents explain what the value is and how some of the projects that have been funded and some of the research and some of the grants. And I think we're sort of talking about it in an abstract form. Mm-hmm. And I think this report is excellent and it raises really important questions and that we do need to have a clearer vision of what this money is for and who it should benefit. And so it's a really good conversation. I'm just saying we want to make sure we have everybody on at the table. And I think the U of M is going to testify next time, right? So we'll hear about their.
That's the reason why we are having 2 days of this.
Yeah.
Unlike the House, they just had 1 day. So this is a very important report. You gentlemen have done a great job with this, and we need to – it's a substantial fund that does a lot of good, but we want to make sure we get it right. So Senator Jungbauer and then Senator Dibble.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And Mr. Nobles, I did like your terminology there, extracted funds. That was good. And ostensibly, we can use extracted funds to create great things. But I'm wondering, you know, in research and development, generally, if private funds come in under contract, the individuals that provide those funds are guaranteed with the patent rights and or commercial marketing rights to regain a return on investment on their dollars. And I'm wondering if you looked at the contracts for this research and development, and did we ratepayers or the general public get any benefit here, or was this, you know, arguably free money with no strings attached?
Mr. Alters.
Madam Chair, members, I recall looking at the Excel contracts, and again, they may want to speak to this specifically, but there is language in their contracts about maintaining some right to the intellectual property that's developed during this research. I don't know if there have been actual cases where they've ever gotten a direct payback to Excel Energy, and that would be a question, I guess, for them. But I don't know. I just know there's contract language.
Madam Chair and members, I'm hoping we can get some of that contract language so we could actually see it, so that we understand, you know, if we are retaining something for that investment. Thanks.
But Madam Chair, again, I think what you're going to find is that, and it's a theme throughout this in terms of the fragmentation, it's, as I think Mr. Alter expressed it very well, it's a mixed bag. I mean, I don't know what rights were retained, for example, for the money that was given to the Excelsior Energy for the Mesaba project. It would be a question to pursue. So I think it's going to vary depending on whether or not the university is executing the contracts, Department of Commerce, PUC, or whomever.
Senator Jungbar.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and Mr. Nobles. And that is a good point, because as we move along and we fine-tune what we're saying here, is if it has a direct benefit back to the consumer in terms of electrical generation or something that would save money in terms of that generation or other things, as we kind of try to have a link there, I think that would be the payback. But if we're putting money out to research and development, I think we need to make sure that we're protecting and having some buy-in to that intellectual property that might be created under that research and development. So I think if we say there's a value to the research and development that doesn't have a direct payback, we ought to protect something there. So I think you make a good distinction.
Senator Dish.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So I just want to second Senator Anderson's inquiry and Senator Jungbauer's inquiry. I think I'd like much more elimination on both of those questions. I mean, I think there's two sides to Senator Jungbauer's question. One is, you know, making sure that perhaps there is a payback, but also making sure that, you know, something that's paid for ostensibly with public-ish sort of dollars has you know, is somewhat in the public domain, and so we're not paying for research that then can be shelved or squelched somehow. So there's a balance there. So I'm really interested in how that's formulated. My question is, what is our sense of how competitive it is to qualify for these dollars? Is it hard to receive a grant, or is this easy money? And or there, you know, how many proposals are there, and how many emerge successfully? And also, does this money leverage other money, or does other money leverage this money? Are there other dollars that go into these individual research projects?
Mr. Alters.
Madam Chair, on the issue of competitiveness, and I know we have a discussion in the report that I think relates to the number of proposals that have come in. What I can say is that over time, as this program has become more known, I think there's been more interest, more proposals coming in. Certainly, I think that's been the experience at the PUC. They've done three rounds, essentially, where they issued RFPs, and they got more applications the second time than they did the first time, and so forth. So I think it's my impression is it's been quite competitive, and in part with the PUC awards because of the amount of money. I mean, they're talking about typically $1 million grant. So I think there has been a fairly high level of competitiveness for the grants. And we can get back to specifically about how many applications there have been. The other part of your question.
Leverage.
There is also a section in the report on leveraged dollars, and I can, page 41 has a little discussion there of what the different administrative entities are reporting as being the dollars from non-RDF sources that have come in to either match or supplement the RDF funds. And I think the way you pose the question is an interesting one. I mean, I think it always is kind of a question of what leveraged what.
Yeah.
And there's no easy way to sort that out. Clearly, some of these projects are bringing in federal money in cases where this has been the initiating project. But this is our best shot at the total amount of money that has been leveraged as reported by the administrative entities on that page.
Senator Dable.
Is there any evidence that leverage improves a proposal's prospects?
Madam
Whatever
Chair,
direction that leverage works.
Senator Dibble, I think that, and I think this may be true with the University of Minnesota, I mean, I think they consider whether or not there are matching funds or other funds available as part of their selection process. Yeah. But,
and one more follow-up.
Senator Dibble.
Is that desirable? I mean, I don't know the answer that, you know, sometimes leverage is considered virtuous. Sometimes a particular pot of money is where we go for worthy projects that just for whatever reason haven't received attention from the other funding sources.
Madam Chair, Senator Dibble, I think that's a good question. I mean, some people like to see money coming into the state that wouldn't otherwise be here, but you want to be making the right decisions about which projects to fund to and not having those dollars always driving your decision.
Madam Chair, if the other presenters could hold that question in their minds and maybe address it.
No, that'd be good.
Thanks.
Senator Metzen.
Yeah, Madam Chair, I'd like to follow up on a question you asked on slide 13. The Minnesota ratepayers, of course, are paying for this, and it looks like 58% of the applications are through Minnesota companies and facilities here, which obviously means 42% are done somewhere else. That doesn't make sense to me. If the ratepayers in Minnesota are footing the bill, why such a high percentage would be leaving our state? Maybe we talked about that and I didn't hear it, but that seems like a large number. It should be 100% Minnesota companies and factories and people benefiting from our ratepayers in Minnesota.
Madam Chair and Senator Metzen, just a clarification that 86% of the dollars that go out are going to Minnesota grantees, which might be, let's say, the University of Minnesota. What's shown on that slide was taking a little bit different cut at this and saying, do the projects that were done have a direct connection to a Minnesota project or a company or a facility? Do they use a Minnesota product? So it was just a little bit different way of looking at that. And, Madam Chair, I guess I would add one other thing. I think that the argument that would be made by the PUC is that some of these projects have been selected with out-of-state companies with the intent that that company would do something that's groundbreaking and that might benefit Minnesota ratepayers by shedding light on something that we as a state can benefit from, even if the consultant or whoever's doing the work is from Washington State or wherever they are. But admittedly, that's a debatable point.
And okay. Senator Metzen, to that point, to your point, too, is I sometimes wonder, number one, if we are the only one that has some kind of fund like this that is supplementing research projects, the only state. I'm sure there's some other states that have something like this, but what are they doing? Who's paying for their research in other states? And is it the private sector? Are they contributing? Or are we just relying on, you know, funds like this or the ratepayers to get these research projects going, and really whose responsibility is it? So those are just questions I have out there. If it's going to benefit Minnesota and the Minnesota ratepayers and our energy agenda, that's one thing. But to me, I have some doubts whether we're using that money effectively. And we need to get into that. So anybody else?
Right, Brownie.
Thank you, Mr. Alters and Mr. Nobles. Really appreciate your expertise on this. And Ms. McCartan.
Well, if I leave, I want a complete report from you.
Oh, thank you. Excuse me, Madam Chair. A moment here.
Well, you have an expert working on you. I'm helping
so.
You there.
Okay.
Mr. Edmond knows what he's doing.
He's calling in reinforcement.
Okay.
And then this is for it?
Welcome, Ms. McCartan, to the Energy Committee. If you could state your name, please.
Madam Chair, committee members, my name is Laura McCartan. I'm Regional Vice President with Northern States Power Minnesota. And I want to thank you for the opportunity to be here today to engage in this dialogue about the Renewable Development Fund. As you've heard, over the past 10 years, Xcel Energy customers have paid in $165 million to this fund. And it is appropriate at this time to take a look at what we've learned, the benefits that have been gained from that, and lessons that have been learned, and what direction makes sense to go forward. I'd also like to commend the Office of the Legislative Auditor for a very thorough and fair picture of the RDF program today. I'm going to just touch on a few of the things and elaborate a little bit more on some of the things that you heard of from the auditor, starting with just a quick look at the background. You've heard much of this, so I'll try not to be repetitive. This was established in 1994 as part of the legislation that authorized dry storage of used nuclear fuel at the Prairie Island plant. And the purpose of the funds was for Xcel Energy customers to help pay to help develop renewable energy sources that then could be used in the future to serve Xcel Energy customers. The legislation also mandated that Xcel Energy develop 850 megawatts of wind power and 125 megawatts of biomass power to serve our customers. The fund is 100% paid by Xcel ratepayers. It is a general ledger entry on our accounting, on our company books. It's not a separate pile of cash that's been accumulated. In fact, we account for it in the books, and we say this is how much money, according to how many storage units are in place and how many years have passed, this is how much money that can be used to that purpose. But we don't actually start collecting that until the year that we expect to spend it. So we try to keep the collection close to the actual timing of the disbursement. Initially, all of the RDF funds were used for grant projects that were approved by the PUC and administered by Xcel Energy. And over time, as the auditor pointed out, that has evolved. And this slide here shows you that of the $165 million to date, about $59.4 million have been dispersed through the PUC-controlled process, that which is administered by Xcel and decisions made by the PUC. About $90.5 million have been dispersed through legislative directives, and these include the Renewable Energy Production Incentive you heard of, about $52 million to that, the University of Minnesota Initiative on Renewable Energy and the Environment, about $15 million to date, and the Department of Commerce Next Generation Energy Act and other programs in the amount of $15 million, and then the $10 million to the Mesaba Coal Project. As the auditor pointed out, the middle column, the $90.6 million, also, there remains then about $15 million that has not been dispersed. The thought is that with the next cycle of dispersing grants, that would be then paid out to different projects. So those are still to be dispersed to particular projects, $15
million. Ms. McLaren, when does that next cycle start?
That would start this year. We've begun some preliminary planning as to, and I'll speak about that later, but that would be this year, depending upon what happens, I guess, through the course of the legislative session. And as the auditor pointed out, Xcel Energy as the administrator and the PUC as the decision maker has no authority over that $90.6 million. But I do want to speak to the process that's used for the 59.4, which we think is a rigorous process and is transparent and is accountable. It starts with the process where a request for proposal is developed, and this is developed with the renewable the RDF Advisory Board, Xcel Energy, input from state agencies. So that is issued publicly, and that says we'd like to get some proposals here to consider for granting. Those proposals come in, and an independent contractor reviews them and scores them according to criteria that have been developed and approved, again, with the advisory board and our regulators. Once the independent contractor completes that work, that information then is on those particular sets of projects is reviewed by the advisory board, by Xcel Energy, and from that, And the Office of Energy Security is part of that review process as well. From that, a set of recommendations. There's a consensus developed on here's the projects that we think should receive funding in this cycle of granting. That goes to the PUC, and an open public process then ensues, which ultimately results in a decision by the PUC. This is a process that the OES is involved in, other interested parties, members of the advisory board, anybody who has an interest. There's an error on the slide here I'd like to point out. It says the OES and the PUC approve grant award contracts. This is the PUC that approves the grant award contracts. These are specific contracts that Xcel Energy negotiates with those projects that have been approved by the PUC as to how these grant funds would be dispersed going forward. And these particular contracts are based on reimbursement as project milestones are met. So it is, I think, as the auditor suggested, a preferred method is the reimbursement basis. Going forward, this slide, let me explain this just a little bit. This is to show you where we are with RDF funds that would be available and compared to obligations that have already been placed on those RDF funds. So the blue-purple is payments or obligations from the customers of Xcel Energy according to the amount of storage units at place at Monticello and Prairie Island. What you can see here is beyond that $15 million that I mentioned earlier that would be handled through this upcoming cycle of granting, beyond that, the fund is fully allocated over the next couple of years, where you can see the blue-purple and the red-purple lines are about the same in 2011 and 12. So the money that would be available to be spent is just about equal to the obligations or the commitments that have already been made to spend that money. In 2013, you start to see that the amount available starts to get more than the obligations that are in place, and then in 2014, 15, and 16, you can see that gap grow. And that's due to the fact that we're adding more storage units at the nuclear power plants in those out years, and some of the current obligations have started to expire. So you start to see that 14, 15, 16, there is some money there available to go into additional granting cycles.
Ms. McLaren.
Yes.
Senator Brown.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I have a few questions on this graph. For the year 2012, we have more money going out in obligations than what we have coming in. Is that correct?
It shows that. I don't know that that's it appears to be a minor difference, yeah.
Okay, and do we know Chair. We have obligations through 2016. Do we know exactly where that money is obligated?
Madam Chair, Senator, I think we do. I think that information is known. I believe that those are the legislative obligations that exist that have been made through legislative decisions.
Could I get a list of those?
Senator Brown.
Madam Chair.
Madam Chair, Senator, yes, we'll certainly make sure to follow up and give you a list of that information.
Thank you.
Ms. McLaren, and going, you don't have to go back to the last slide, but the only involvement on these grants that you and the PUC are involved in, the only involvement of the ratepayer is from the two representatives on the board. Is that correct? Is there any other involvement from their ratepayers, your customers, willingly involve them in some of these ideas and let them know? Is there anything that you do?
Madam Chair, you're asking about the MPCU grant. My understanding is the representation comes from the members on the advisory board and then the OES and the PUC as agents of the public and as of agents of our customers bring that perspective to the process.
There's nothing as what Xcel does to let the ratepayers know what some things that are happening, what they're using their dollars for.
Madam Chair.
To do just a company basis.
Madam Chair, actually, thank you for that question. We do. There are various publications or communication efforts where we do share that through the Renewable Development Fund, certain projects have been funded, have had certain results. It's not a concentrated, it's not something that goes into, say, a bill insert, which gets to every customer all the time. But we do sometimes do press releases or it's available on our website, so there are some means of communicating that to our customers.
It would be nice to know which successes there has been, too, in some of these grants and proposals and projects.
And, Madam Chair, there's been a lot of projects, and I think you might hear some of that from some of the subsequent speakers, but there have been some very interesting projects and some good results from some of these projects that have have been funded. I don't have it right here at my fingertips, but we can follow up with
that
more
would be
information.
Wonderful. Thank okay. you. Senator Howe, did you have something?
No.
No.
I'll have a question later, though.
Okay. Thank you, Ms. McLaren.
Okay. Let me wrap up here. Let me just first speak to the Cycle 4. I mentioned that this summer we would expect to go forward with Cycle 4 granting. In previous grant cycles, about half of the dollars that have been governed by the PUC process have gone to R&D type of projects. However, we agree with what the auditor said. It's tough to assign a real direct benefit to customers from that. So going forward, our focus with this next cycle is going to be on energy production projects. We'll focus primarily on small solar PV projects for K-12 schools, local units of government, and businesses, and on renewable electric energy production from organic waste. So that's the intention for this upcoming grant cycle. Now, if I could just maybe step aside a little bit. Since the establishment of the RDF program in 1994, Xcel Energy and the state as a whole has made tremendous advancements in the use of renewable energy, and I think we are a leader in the nation in that respect. For example, speaking from Xcel Energy's standpoint, we are on track, in fact, ahead of schedule in meeting the milestones for the renewable energy standard. Our wind source program continues to grow, even though we're no longer required to provide that offering, and we are proceeding with adding solar power to the wind source portfolio because we've heard from our customers they're interested in that. And last year, we launched our very popular solar rewards program in Minnesota, which was a rebate program. So it combined, I think, with a lot of rebates that were available, and a lot of projects have flowed from that. I say this to let you know that we're fully committed to a clean energy future, and we think we've done very well with the guidance of our policymakers, such as yourselves, constructive regulation, the engagement of stakeholders in the environmental and business community. So with that, here we are in 2011. It's a lot different than where we were in 1994 when the fund was established, and the time may be right to consider whether there are appropriate changes to make to the fund. So let me just go through a few recommendations here from Xcel's standpoint. We do believe that the RDF should remain a private fund. It's comprised solely of Xcel Energy customer dollars, and it is like other legislative directives to Xcel Energy to use our resources in a certain way, including conservation spending, wind investment, and biomass purchases. So we would not support a legislative proposal to change it to a public fund. We also believe that the best way to provide the necessary oversight and accountability for use of these funds is with the MPCU process, and that is well administered. There's some improvements that can be made, and we're always willing to do so, but we think it's a very sound, rigorous, transparent, and accountable process. The revisions may be in order. We think that it would be appropriate to focus RDF funds on renewable electric generation. And given some of the new challenges facing the electric industry today, it may make sense to consider whether or not to look at things like smart grid investments or electric vehicle type of evolution that can impact how electric energy production impacts the environment. That may be appropriate to look at. So if that's something that is of interest, we'd certainly be interested in that conversation as well. So with that, I'll close, and thank you for the opportunity to speak to you this afternoon.
Yes, thank you, Ms. Clark. Senator Howe?
Madam Chair, I was wondering if you could talk just a little bit. I know this fund is based on the number of dry casts, and there's a sliding scale. But can you speak to the improvements in storing the spent fuel rods, and can we store more spent fuel rods now in the cast, like more per cast than we did when we first started this project? And then I know the spent fuel rods, we don't take into account what's in the pool. It's just what's stored out in the dry cast. And I maybe just speak to a little bit of that rationale and what the improvement in technology has been.
And Ms. McLaren.
Okay, Madam Chair, Senator. My understanding is that the design of the storage units we're using at Prairie Island isn't changing in terms of the amount of used fuel per storage unit. If you could put twice as much in there and you'd have half as many storage units, then you would be paying less into the RDF. But I think that the current design of the storage unit there is the same as when we first began using them at Prairie Island. Monticello has its own design for storage unit, and I think it's possible, I suppose, going forward that you could find a more compact design and have more used fuel in one given storage unit. But I don't know that we have anything on the drawing boards for that today.
Madam Chair, can you just speak to, like, maybe how many dry casks worth of spent fuel rods are in the pool currently, and maybe how that's changed, maybe to the re-racking of the pool, and how many spent fuel rods can be safely stored in the pool?
Ms. McLaren.
Madam Chair, Senator, I don't have that information here, but it's readily available. So we could get you how much spent fuel is currently in the pool at Prairie Island, and we can tell you how that's changed over time, too, as we've gone through re-racking to more efficiently store fuel in the pool. So we can get you that information.
Thank you.
Ms. McCartan, I've been saying your name wrong the whole time. I'm sorry. My question to you is, how much is the fund projected to increase by the time the licenses are up on this?
I may have something here to show you. Now, do you mean how much is the annual payment into the fund projected to increase?
No,
the
projected total revenue.
Total? Mm-hmm. From here on out, and you've got a lot of assumptions in there, but based upon the assumption about how the plant operates and how much spent fuel would go into place, out through the year 2030, something on the order of an additional $700 million in today's dollars. So if you just take without escalating or trying to account for the time value of money.
Mm-hmm. And Ms. McCartan, what is, say, Colorado, you have a large presence there. What do they do as far as, maybe you can answer my question that I had previously about research projects and how are they funded. What do they do there for their research projects dealing with renewables and electric renewables?
Madam Chair, I'm sorry, I don't know the answer to that. Whether, in particular as a utility, whether we have anything we pay into, whether the state has established something. I don't know if the state funds that. I know that there's a very prestigious organization located in Colorado that is involved in renewable energy development, but I don't know whether the state of Colorado funds that or if there's some other mechanism. But we'll look into that and let you know as well.
Mm-hmm. Thank you. I appreciate that. Senator Dibble.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Just reflecting on my earlier question to Mr. Alter. Do we have an opinion, does Xcel have an opinion on the use of this fund as for research purposes, as a place to go to leverage additional dollars into these research projects from federal or private or other sources? Or do we think this is a good fund to look at for worthy research that has otherwise had a difficult time finding sponsorship?
Ms. McCartan.
Madam Chair, Senator, I think Xcel's preference is to try to focus more on actual energy production type of projects going forward. In the past, about half of the monies have gone to research and development, and I think, you know, there's merit in that, but I think some of the difficulties with funding research and development and trying to tie it back to ratepayers or customers, I guess it's a philosophy whether you want to go that way or not. I think going forward, we'd prefer to try to focus on energy production type of projects.
Senator Dibble.
So kind of going down that path, slightly different question, though. If we decide that the final authority for approval of grants should rest with the PUC, we had a lot of conversation the other day on the floor about let the PUC do its job. But we did see in the legislative auditor's report, that even the PUC has strayed a little bit, as perhaps we have articulated on a particular project in the past, that maybe something to a significant sum of dollars was funded that maybe wasn't necessarily renewable and may never see the light of day for all we know. Do you support the idea of providing additional policy guidance in terms of what exactly this, you know, these funds would be intended for, even if we do give final authority and rest that with the PUC?
Madam Chair.
Ms. McCartan.
Senator, I think that guidance where there is confusion will be helpful. And I think that as everyone has tried to follow the intent or execute in a way that they believe is correct and proper, if that is not, as we sit here today and we look back and say, well, it's sort of straight around a little bit, I don't think that's for anybody's ill intent, but I think some additional guidance would certainly be helpful.
Thank you. Thank you, Senator Dibble. Any other questions? Oh, Senator Junkbar.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and Ms. McCartan.
You get stuck back there. I'm sorry.
I get stuck back behind the scene there, yes, if you look back. While the solar rebate program always seems like a great deal, and, you know, we want to encourage that kind of thing, what I hear from folks that are in your service area is the RDF fund is a tax on the poor to subsidize the rich. And, I mean, you think about the economy today, and the only people that can afford these solar arrays are tremendously expensive are rich people. And you have a rebate program, so it means you have to spend the money up front to get something in return. Is there any way that Xcel is looking to try to do more programmatic things that can support the poor folks that are paying into the fund as well?
Ms. McCartan.
Madam Chair, Senator, perhaps not directly on solar programs, but I think we've got a lot of other programs that are looking at how we can help lower-income customers through energy efficiency products. We have something called the Home Energy Squad, which is something that a van that moves around into a neighborhood and comes in very quickly into someone's home and does very basic projects that can have a big impact on people's energy bill, from weather stripping to installing a programmable thermostat to wrapping the water heater. So I think that we do have a lot of programs trying to look at our lower-income customers and how we can help them with their energy bill in particular. There are many programs that, I'll take, for example, conservation. Not everybody uses a conservation program, but because of those customers that choose to use our conservation programs, they've allowed every other customer to benefit because they've helped push off the need for new power plants. That's kept our costs lower than it otherwise would be. So in the scheme of things, I don't know that we can perfectly, you know, allocate exact cost and exact benefit to every one of our customers is such a diversity, but I think overall we're trying to do things that benefit all of our customers.
Senator Junkbar.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Ms. McCartan, that makes sense, but two things that kind of go off of that, and, you know, I don't know about the rest of you, but I can't afford a solar array, but I'd certainly love to have one. It would be great, and I think we all think new technology are wonderful things. So I like that, but in general terms, what is a cost to somebody for your van that runs around, and can you get us information? Because we do get calls like that, you know, we're a person out there in the general public, here's the one side of the thing that's going on here, and we don't have the answers in our office. I'd like to keep, and as I'm sure most members do, things in our office, so when somebody calls, we can say, well, did you know about this program?
Madam Chair, Senator, we would love to give you that information, and we certainly will.
And Madam
Senator
Chair,
Stump.
The cost, Ms. McCartan?
And Madam Chair, Senator, are you asking the cost of our conservation in particular, that one program?
The home energy squad.
I don't have that handy, but we'll get you information on the, excuse me, Madam Chair, Senator, we'll get you the information on the home energy squad and anything else you might be interested in.
Thanks.
Thank you. Senator Stelz?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Senator Kubley and Senator Sparks and myself are wondering how far that energy van will
go. For you, we'll go up north, definitely.
Madam Chair, Senator, it is for our customers in our service territory, but our website has a load of good information, and you're welcome to access that and make use of all that information.
That's great. Well, thank you very much. Thank you, Ms. McCartan,
thank
for
you.
Coming, and I hope that you're available. We're going to continue this discussion on Thursday, and I hope there may be more questions for you. I hope you're available on Thursday, and we will be coming back to Ms. Taylor and Ms. Seifert, and we'll continue the discussion and your questions, and meeting is adjourned.
Yeah.